Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us on Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Good to be on AZ Central Sports, partner with the Arizona Republic, on White Mountain Radio and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat. A lot on my mind today. Eric Metz is going to join us in studio. NFL agent, just had the second overall pick in the draft, but there's not much on the draft other than Eric has a Johnny Manziel story. Evidently, and a senior executive vice president of everything as a part of Sports 360 AZ is Eric Sorensen. So the word is Metz was sitting next to Manziel at the draft.
At the table directly across from Manziel.
So I don't want to take away Eric's story here.
And I don't know the whole story. He just said, hey, I had a pretty fascinating conversation with Johnny Manziel during the draft. So I can't wait to hear what that's all about.
When the rock was falling in the water.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
I wonder if Metz said, you have the wrong guy representing you. I would not have allowed this. I wonder if that's the case.
I wouldn't put it past Eric.
So we're going to have Eric Metz in studio, not on that as much as I want to know about this NFL lawsuit that was filed yesterday on Toradol and Vicodin and players saying that they were abused and the doctors were looking the other way and there were people who weren't even doctors that were handing out all this stuff. There's a couple of angles to this lawsuit involving Valley players that I'm working on, and Eric and I are working on, trying to localize this even further. So this lawsuit does have an Arizona angle to it. And again, as if you're just finding us for the first time, we are Arizona-centric. Okay, so we do everything that we see around Arizona sports. I'll do the national stuff, too. That's low-hanging fruit in my mind, but we're very Arizona-centric. So when this lawsuit came out yesterday, and I see a couple of names that have Arizona ties, that's who I'm chasing, and that's how I want to do this. So you never know who's going to drop in on the show over the next couple of hours, but needless to say, we're going to do a lot on the lawsuit and the pain-killing side, the drug side of the NFL. The headline today in USA Today, it was very damaging towards the league, and we'll talk about that. Obviously, what went on with the Suns last night in the lottery, Kevin Love, who I've been pounding my fist for since last December. I don't want Paul Gasol. I don't need Paul Gasol. Kevin Love is who I want the Suns to go after. Now, the lottery is complete. I'll have some thoughts on that as the show moves along. And other things going on in the world of sports as well. Our website, sports360az.com. Plenty of Arizona content. Check it on out. Let's get you caught up now. Things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. I'll be at the Honda Resort and Casino tomorrow night, pulling down the slots, eating some great food, having some fun, checking out how business is going at the Honda Resort and Casino. It's where you need to go to get away this weekend, long holiday weekend coming up. Why not head up to Pine Top, head up to Sholo, get away from it all, and enjoy the Honda Resort and Casino, the place to stay, great entertainment. That is at the Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. So Eric and I yesterday, after the show, we went over to the Cardinals for their OTAs. 90 guys on split fields. And it was, you know, it was entertaining to see the players back out on the field. It's May, so for me to sit here and say they're going to win this and we're going to go through the schedule and we're going to talk about the backup left tackle, that's, you know, that's not where I'm at on this. It's encouraging to see the team. It's very encouraging in just 2 years' time to see how far they've come and that they were so close last year. I really like the depth that they've established. Are there question marks all over the place? Yeah, there are. This is not one of those deals where you can look at and say, well, they've got it all figured out. But that's why they go through these workouts in May. Here is Bruce Arians' competition breeding success across the board here at Cardinals camp.
It's a nice battle because we got good competition in about four rooms right now. Wide receiver, tight end, outside linebacker, inside linebacker. So offensive line. As long as we can keep building competition, that's going to breed success because our practices are going to be full speed and nobody take anything for granted.
Was Bruce Arians yesterday out at Cardinals. Now, Carson Palmer spoke, and I talked to Carson. I asked him amid the media scrum on being more comfortable. Here's your quarterback. A year ago, he was just coming in, flopping around like a fish, trying to figure it all out. A year later, he and the team are much more comfortable at this OTA.
It's great to be back out. It's great to, you know, it's not that it's live drills and we're tackling, but to have helmets on and to go against the defense. It's been a long off season, and there's been a lot of growth, and it's, you know, comparing today to a year ago this day, There's zero comparison. This was fun. This was enjoyable. You know, you could see the development in certain guys. You know, jumped off the field. I mean, the way Mike Floyd is playing right now just jumped out at me from the get-go. Some of the things we saw Ted Ginn do today, you know, in his first rep in this offense. So that kind of stuff is fun, and it's fun to just to get out against their, you know, against Pat and you know, some of the new linebackers we have and the safeties we have, and you know, talk a little trash and compete and go back and forth. So it was a great first day.
What was your comfort level for you today from a year ago to now?
No comparison. You know, you can't. It's hard to gauge that. Just the only way I can say it, there's no comparison. You know, myself and other guys were out here last year and just swimming. You know, inside your head, you're thinking about 80 different things. Today, I was thinking about one thing, and that was my first progression, my second progression, my third progression. And so it was actually enjoyable. It wasn't, you know, frustrating and you know, all the motions you go through when you're learning a new offense. I've had an entire offseason to study this offense and study our guys in this offense, and it was fun.
And I asked Carson Palmer, too, about Michael Floyd because he referenced them there earlier. We'll hear from Carson Palmer on Michael Floyd later on this week. Really interesting to hear him talk and just gush about Michael Floyd and the development of Michael Floyd and what he has seen out of him at the wide receiver spot. We'll hear from that later on this week. John Abraham spoke yesterday. I really like John Abraham because he's not one of these guys that is going to sit there and do the whole rah-rah, let's get all excited, it's May. I've seen enough of those guys. I kind of like guys that deal in reality and not sit there and try to sell it to people holding microphones and notepads and say things that in May, yeah, we're a Super Bowl team and all that nonsense. Instead, John Abraham, very straightforward, although he did say he's going to get, he's aiming to get 20 sacks this season. Here is John Abraham, one of the leaders on this Cardinals defense, about how good they're going to be this season.
All the stuff don't mean nothing until you get to the 16 games of the season. Like, all the stuff is real nice. Oh, he looked good on paper. Oh, they got him. They got this. Oh, my God. They're going to be the – I remember back in the day when Washington loaded up on everybody. They can get Bruce Smith, Deion. Oh, they're going to win the championship this year. Man, I think they won 6 games. they got Hall of Famers all on the team. You know, nothing don't mean nothing on the paper until you, like, play on your Sundays.
I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, let's just tap the brakes. I know the easy thing to do is say, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing ever, but I respect guys that take the more realistic approach like John Abraham. So that's at the Cardinals OTA. To give you an idea of how absurd this all is in the NFL offseason, today Johnny Manziel's running third team in Cleveland today. Tyler Thigpen is ahead of him. Brian Hoyer's ahead of him. Yeah, right. We're going to have our guy Johnny sit behind Thigpen and Hoyer. That doesn't even sound like a good law firm. Thigpen, Hoyer, and Manziel. No, it's not even close. So that's what's going on today in Cleveland. So let's not get all over the top on this stuff. It's fine. It's good. I think the overriding interesting story today is the NFL painkiller lawsuit. Headline in USA Today about this is a bad day for the league, and it is. Although painkillers have been discussed around NFL locker rooms for decades, I'm reading some of this now, plaintiffs in this new suit give details. We all like details. Give us details in context about which drugs they say teams persuaded them to use and how even severe injuries were covered up temporarily. Now, there's two sides of the street on this. The painkillers are talking about are Percocet, Vicodin, Percodan, anti-inflammatories like Toradol, sleep aids like Ambien, handed out like Halloween candy, according to lead attorney Steve Silverman. But there are players that have run out of money and have looked at, can we get a money grab in all fairness to the NFL on all this? One of those players is Jeremy Newberry, who's a Pro Bowl center, had a good run in the NFL, Pro Bowl lineman. Here's Jeremy Newberry on he's in this lawsuit, along with former Arizona Cardinal, Phoenix Cardinal, St. Louis Cardinal, Roy Green is in this lawsuit, and others. Here's Jeremy Newberry on how widespread this was in the NFL.
I mean, the Toradol line was crazy. I mean, in the general public, you know, they wouldn't believe that if they saw, it's almost like a cattle call where you'd have 20 to 25 guys standing with your pants half down, waiting in line for a doctor that's got 100, you know, different syringes lined up, and you're walking through, you know, they're sticking you one at a time as you walk in and out. Takes all of a couple seconds to walk in. They got the needles already preloaded, and they're shooting up literally half the team in some cases.
More Jeremy Newberry. Drugs were getting handed out to everybody.
You know, that's part of the problem. You know, a lot of times the team trainers are giving out drugs. You know, none of them got a medical degree. None of them are, some of them aren't even licensed, and they're handing out the drugs. They're handing out anti-inflammatories. They're handing out painkillers. They're handing out sleeping pills.
So, you know, the NFL, I don't see how the NFL can win on this. But I also have to be cognizant that there are players that are part of a money grab. I've talked about this topic for over 3 years since we started doing Sports 360 AZ. Some NFL people aren't very happy that I bring this up all the time, but it's there. It's relevant. It is part of what went down. And the whole term of being treated like a piece of meat. When I see Jim McMahon's name attached to this, Jim McMahon says that there was a general disregard for their health. McMahon only learned 2 or 3 years ago that he'd broken his neck during his career. One of the players in this lawsuit talked about how he played an entire season on a broken leg. Not that he was told that for 5 years. He also was fed a constant diet of pills to deal with the pain. I think if you and I are in this position, we're not being paid millions of dollars. I know for myself, I was shot up with Toradol to get through some of my knee issues through the years. And it's wonderful. In the moment, it's awful for my kidneys, okay? And it wasn't just a 1 or 2 time thing for me. I was on Toradol getting shot up as much as I could. I loved it. But these group of retired players that filed this suit yesterday, how culpable are they? They're in the moment. They're being paid big jack to play the game. It's part of the risk. It's part of the damage that's going to be done to your body. You have to know going in that you're going to be putting your body in harm's way. And there may be some things that you end up having done to your body to get through it so that you can have the lifestyle of an NFL player. So I am cognizant of that. The NFL is still trying to persuade a federal judge to accept a $766 million settlement with another group of former players who said the league hid or ignored the devastating effects of concussions and head trauma. When this story came out last year and I saw the total at $766 million, that's nothing to the NFL. That is absolutely nothing. So, of course, the players are saying, hey, this sounds all well and good. The NFL is like, oh, well, this is a fair lawsuit. We'll give you $766 million. That's nothing for all these guys that are out there. Six of the players in this new lawsuit also are part of the concussion lawsuit. It does seem to reflect a trend for a period of time of recklessness on the part of the NFL, says Stanford Law Professor Bill Gould. This is in the USA Today story. He is the former chair of the National Labor Relations Board. This litigation, if the complaint is accurate, now how are you going to prove that, would reflect very much the same kind of recklessness of cavalier attitude toward players' safety. So the two are trying to be brought together. Do I think there was a time in the NFL where guys are just handing out painkillers? Sure. I remember standing in the Oakland Raiders locker room trying to interview Lyle Alzado and John Matuszak, who, by the way, are both dead far before their time. And I've got my little recorder there, and John Matuszak looked like one big pimple, and Lyle Alzado's butt was up around his neck. Can I be any more graphic than that? His body was completely disfigured. Oh, by the way, they both died of stuff that they put in him. So, yeah, I've seen this. Do I think that there was that there's a leg to stand on for these players? Sure, I do. But I also have to look at the NFL side of this and say how much of this is a money grab, and these guys had to know what they were going into. I'm going to talk with Eric Metz much further about this story because he's got clients. I'm sure he's in the middle of all this. That's in about 10 minutes here in studio. On the other side, though, so Kevin Love, Phoenix Suns, the lottery order is now set. I can't see any way, shape, or form the Suns hang on to these three picks. And I've got some ideas, some theories, and a little bit of context to put in on this. Talked to some people this morning whose opinions in the agent community I respect. That's on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com. On AZ Central Sports, good to partner with the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
I was cheering last night for David Griffin. David Griffin is somebody that's been in the Valley sports scene, or was in the Valley sports scene, for as long as I've been here. And he took off when things got south with Robert Sarver, Steve Kerr, and company, went over to Cleveland, was just recently named the general manager. Griff worked all the way back in the Phoenix Suns public relations department. If you're like in your 20s and 30s and you're watching the show and you're the guy sitting at a desk and you're absolutely miserable and you may be making big money, you may be making big coin, but you figured it out that money is not the sole existence of life, that you want to go pursue your dream, go look at David Griffin. He's a guy that worked as an assistant PR director and then said, I'll work in the film room. I'll do whatever it takes with the Phoenix Suns. And now he's the general manager of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And last night he's shaking hands with Dr. J after he gets the number one overall pick in the NBA draft lottery. I feel very good for Griff and to see his ascension. Now, Cleveland has been a train wreck of a franchise. Let's be honest here. When you have the number one overall pick three of the last 4 years, and Kyrie and Bennett, and now who knows what you're going to get with the number one overall pick. It's not like they've got it all figured out there. We're going to hear from David Griffin in a minute. Let me take a moment to talk to you about Western Grade, Western Materials. We're talking about landscaping, topsoil, asphalt, paving, talking to home builders, developers, Western Grade, Western Materials, their CEO, Troy Gillespie, down-to-earth guy. When I've talked to Troy about his business, he always talks about wanting to help out family, help you out with your project. When you're talking about something as important as your custom home, whether you're the builder, the developer, or just yourself putting it in place, Troy and his team are the ones that you want on that project. Western Grade, Western Materials, go to their website. Plenty of information for you online, westerncos.com, westerncos.com, Western Grade, Western Materials, part of sports360az.com. Here was David Griffin last night after the whole lottery thing was finished off. By the way, the lottery is just painful to watch. It's just dreadful. Eric, did you see any of that last night?
Yeah, I was watching it. I watched it.
When Heather Cox is having to say, hey, here's Markieff Morris wearing a suit that'll be at Sugar Bowl in the ice cream section.
Correct. Yes.
And thanks very much for playing. And then she goes right down the line. Thanks for. And then she gets down, and here's James Worthy. And did you ever think the Lakers would be here? So let's pander to the L.A. audience. I'm fine with the Lakers, but let's be honest here. ESPN just panders to the big market. So hey, big game James, let's talk to you about this. And then they get over to the Celtics, and they have a nice, cute little note about the Celtics and all that stuff. A little bit more on the Celtics. Okay, and here's this team, and who cares? And here's this team. Oh, yeah, and here's this team. And we're going to take a commercial, and when we come back, hey, Dr. J is here. It's Philadelphia. It's a big deal. And
yep.
You know, who really cares about Cleveland? And Milwaukee, who really cares about this girl from Milwaukee?
They get through the first 11 picks, and you're all excited for the top three, and right off to commercial break.
Me
again.
Right. So, of course, me being me, I flipped over to the Diamondbacks game because I'm not going to sit there and...
Oh, I'm sure that went much better.
Oh, it was great for like a minute.
It's one hit.
A minute.
Nice effort.
So then it comes out that Cleveland gets the number one overall pick. I was really hoping that today's show we could talk about the Lakers pick one and Boston picks two. And, you think there's a conspiracy theory in the NBA. Instead, we have this ass-backwards lottery where the same team that can't get out of their way gets the number one overall pick again. Do you think I'd give anything for the Suns to have? Just give me one number one overall pick in Phoenix. Just one. Instead, this is the third time for Cleveland. But here's the part that I think is really interesting about what happened last night. If you're a Suns fan, pay attention here. So the Suns finish with the 14th pick in the draft, and that's fine. But here's David Griffin, who just gets the number one overall pick, and his immediate reaction, his first interview he does, is with the Cavaliers station in Cleveland. And he's asked, would you be open to trading the number one overall pick?
Yeah, absolutely. I've said many times I'd trade me if it made us better, and we're going to be open-minded to whatever it is that advances our cause the furthest.
Okay, so right off the top, rather than the typical, well, we're going to consider all things, whatever is in the best interest of the franchise, blah, 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 that we always hear, right off the top, it's yes. So then, David Griffin, how soon was he contacted by teams in regards to the number one overall pick? Really interesting here.
You won't believe this, but I actually got calls right afterwards while I was standing there doing media. Teams were already reaching out and texting, and so I think it'll be an active period of time.
So let's just look at the Suns for a second. So the Suns now have the 14th, the 18th, and the 27th pick overall. Have those three picks. And they have future potential lottery picks too. So let's look at Kevin Love. Kevin Love wants to go to a franchise where he's not going to get his head kicked into the ground. I know last night the first narrative off the broadcast was, could LeBron James go back to Cleveland because they have Kyrie Irving and he's really close and they have the same age and blah, blah. And Johnny Manziel's name was even brought in. It was just like, come on. Can you connect all those dots? I'm sure you can. I can connect dots here in Phoenix. I want Kevin Love here. I don't want 14, 18, and 27. Okay? I don't want it. If Kevin Love says to the Suns or his people, there's not a chance that I'm going to sign to stay in Phoenix because I want to be in the beach, or I want to be up and play for Steve Kerr in the Bay Area, or I want to be with the Lakers, whatever it may be, that's one thing. But if you can get the indication from Kevin Love of, look, you come to Phoenix, and the Suns have some very good young players. They're growing in the right direction. This could be a winning situation. You can come here and be the guy. Or does Kevin Love look at Phoenix and say, well, you guys are right on the cusp. I don't want to be in that situation. I was there in Minnesota. The thing is, it makes it interesting about the Suns. They have a lot of parts that they can move. I could see moving one or both of the Morris kids. You have last year's lottery pick, Alex Len, who's sitting there. So you've got some parts that you could put together a major, major deal. And it's not like Ryan McDonough hasn't been able to put together major deals and be part of the process of putting together major deals. I shouldn't say he has been able to. He hadn't done it here yet in Phoenix. But he was part of the process in Boston, is my point. There's not another player that I see out there that makes more sense for the Suns to pursue in terms of a trade than Kevin Love. If LeBron James decides to opt out and he's sitting out there on the open market, does it make sense for the Suns to pick up the phone and call? Absolutely it does. I don't think they have a shot, even though there's some that say, well, you know, Bledsoe and LeBron are real close. They're real tight. That's fine. Go make the call. Go do your due diligence. Don't be one of these wishy-washy weenies of, well, he'd never want to go here. That's the guy that doesn't want to walk up to the hot girl, there's the head cheerleader, and say, do you want to go on a date? You know, don't just settle for where you are. Don't just say, well, that's unattainable. You don't know. Go chase it. So here the Suns in this, I think, terrific spot. Would I have liked that pick to be a little bit higher? Sure, I would have. It would have been great. Here's a little bit more from David Griffin. One last bite here. That the flexibility now that Cleveland has, and this is important for Suns fans to take into account.
I think it just puts us in a situation where we have more options available to us. There's absolutely none of these guys, you know, the top three names that everybody talks about, there seems like there might be a little break there in terms of a line between those three, but I think just puts us in a better position to pursue all kinds of different things relative to immediate help or selecting one of the kids that are there.
Okay, so let's flip this around. Cleveland's already gone through this a couple of times. Now it's the third time. You got to figure that they're going to get it right. But let's say that Cleveland is wide open, which David Griffin just said they are. Do the Suns have enough? If it's not Kevin Love, do the Suns have enough to put together to go after the number one overall pick? And is there a need to go after the number one overall pick? There's not a chance Cleveland trades out of one for 14, 18, and 27. So please stop sending me that. I started getting that narrative and note last night. That's not going to happen. But do the Suns have enough in place to where they could say player, player, pick, 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 future pick, whatever it may be? Do the Suns like one of these players enough to where they'd want to trade up? I'm looking at Embiid and a back problem. I can't justify spending my number one overall pick on a guy who's got an achy back, even in March Madness. That scares the heck out of me. I'm watching Wiggins during the course of the season, and it's just a very, very raw talent. There's a reason why so many teams have missed on so many of these high draft picks, because you're talking about kids that are 19, 20, 21. Wiggins looked like he wanted to soil himself last night while he's standing there doing an interview with Heather Cox. It's like the moment finally hit him of, oh my gosh, you know, that's where he was. And so do you want to take every last bit of your resource, if you're the Suns, and go chase somebody that high up? What I do like about this group that's in place is I don't believe that they're adverse to taking a risk. Now, you may say, Brad, we've been in the ditch. Yeah, we were in the ditch because Robert Sarver drove this team right into the ditch with a lot of his decisions. To Robert's credit here in the last year, he has stayed away from it. And just go let Ryan McDonough do his thing. Go let Jeff Hornacek, go let the staff do their thing. There's nobody else that needs to be involved in this. And I'm serious about that. It needs to be Ryan McDonough and Jeff Hornacek and nobody else. Nobody above them, nobody below them. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. Good to partner with the Arizona Republic. White Mountain Radio and on Twitter, at Brad Sesmat. Eric Metz will join me on the other side. NFL agent, his sit-down with Johnny Manziel while the draft is going on. His client getting taken, number two overall pick. And the whole NFL lawsuit today on painkillers. Should be really good NFL talk on the other side.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
The business side of sports, business side of the NFL, Brad Sesmat, sports360az.com, AZ Central Sports. Good to partner with the Arizona Republic and White Mountain Radio on this Wednesday. Eric Metz joins us in studio, NFL Valley agent, business of sports. Around the National Football League, 30 years plus. So you're at the draft. You have Greg Robinson. I've not seen you since the draft. And he gets taken early. Of course, number two pick, you were not disappointed.
We were thrilled.
You got him a good little number, 14.
He'll make about $14.1 million this year.
So he's a happy man. So you're sitting there, and the draft is for you. That was your only client.
Correct.
So now you're sitting at a table and you've got him taken care of. He's doing the media thing and Johnny Manziel is sitting nearby. I'm going to let you tell the story from there because I haven't even heard this yet, because my understanding is you had a little conversation with Johnny as he dropped like a rock in the ocean.
I had a couple conversations. He just happened to be seated at the table next to us. And his table was right by the curtain where everyone walked past to go out and get their hat and meet with the commissioner. So you could see that the poor young man was really having a rough time. I don't know him personally. I did know some of the guys that were coaching him. So I took a second to mention to him that it didn't change the fact that he was still a great quarterback. And then I told him a little story about 1991 when the Seahawks called Brett Favre and told him they'd take him at 18. And then they announced the Seattle Seahawks select quarterback Dan McGuire, San Diego State.
Oh.
And Brett was upset, and then Al Davis picked Todd Marinovich, and Brett didn't go to the second round, and it still didn't change the fact that he ended up being a great player. So just to hang in there, and he was appreciative, his coach was appreciative, and you know, his parents were, you know, obviously very nervous, but they were happy that somebody took a moment to try to cheer him up.
Dan McGuire. I had Dan in San Diego when I was doing those games. That was one of those, wow, really? And now you look back on it.
Well, it's interesting because one of the first games that he played against the San Diego Chargers, they were down there. I was with the general manager and the personnel director, and the way that Dan McGuire carried himself when he came in after dinner, they said, that's the star quality we're looking for. You can tell just by the way he handles himself, he's going to be a great one.
Couldn't move.
Yeah, and the kid from Southern Mississippi, he had a drinking problem, couldn't learn an offense. He'll never make it. He'll never make it in Atlanta, and they traded him to Green Bay.
So the Manziel story finishes out that when he has problems down the road in the NFL, he's going to call you. How's that?
I don't think that's going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
He went to Cleveland, so that's his problem.
Hey, who do you think did really well from your view? As an agent, as a representative of players, you look at a franchise here in the offseason and you say, you know, just talking X's and O's and football, I think fill in the blank did pretty well for themselves at the draft.
Well, it was funny speaking to the Rams just about what a good draft they were having, and they said, well, when you have this many picks, it's easier to do a little bit better.
Don't
but we'll
up.
See how things work out in the long term. But I think the Cardinals might even be working on an extension for Carson Palmer right now.
Mm.
So that'll give him a couple of years to help hopefully Logan Thomas get ready and coach him up a little bit.
Really?
But, on the surface, I thought the Rams did a tremendous job. They got some great players in Aaron Donald, who was training out here in Arizona, and obviously Greg Robinson and Trey Mason, the running back from Auburn. So I think they helped themselves.
The big story of the day, Eric, is this lawsuit now, the pain-killing lawsuit in the NFL. And I'm going to read just a little bit here in a second. But I do want to know from your view, and I'm sure that you've heard the news now, a group of retired players suing the league yesterday, claiming the league gave them powerful painkillers, anti-inflammatories to keep them on the field, never warning them about the long-term dangers. Now, this is not breaking news about, hey, these are painkillers and these are anti-inflammatories. But should the league have warned them about the long-term dangers to their health? You've had clients for 30 years. You've seen this league for 30 years. When you heard about this, what was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was the friends of mine from 30 years ago and less that A, are dead, B, cannot walk, C, are currently getting treatment for kidney failure and things of that sort, and D, just the fact that it was very normal back then to do this type of thing, because if you couldn't play hurt, someone else was going to take your job. And when you're young and invincible, hey, you're going to take whatever whatever you need to do to stay on that field, because you don't want to be Don Majkowski and go to the bench and Brett Favre comes in and you never play again. So it was a necessary evil, people felt, but the responsible people at the top, ownership, things of that sort, certainly there's some liability there. These guys were not told, or maybe at that point they didn't know the depths of how crippling the effects could be later on in life.
Do you ever have a client you just looked at and said, this guy's a mess from this stuff?
I've had plenty of clients that were a mess from it. One's currently in the hospital. I don't know if it's related at all, but he's getting chemotherapy right now, and he probably got a few months to live. And he was one of my best friends, you know, since we were young. So it's awful to see some of that stuff. How much is related, who knows? But it certainly didn't help having all those surgeries and taking all those shots and pills for decades on end. And guys get addicted to it. They find them, as you saw in the one article, they find them on the street afterwards if they can't get them through a doctor.
Did you have to run somebody in, like physically duct tape? And because I've heard that story from some reps, some agents, that, Brad, this was so bad and so prevalent that we actually had to intervene.
There's been plenty of interventions, probably one you didn't need to intervene on, and I think the story's been told before, was and I didn't represent him, but was friends with Brett Favre, and he was taken, he did not want to get replaced because he felt that Mark Brunell might have the ability to beat him out if he came off the field the way that he beat out Don Majkowski. So after one game, he regurgitated, and about a dozen or so full Vicodins came out of his mouth onto the floor in his puke, and he got down and picked him up, put him back in, and chugged him down with the drink. And everybody just said, it's time to check yourself in.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, you know, you got Toradol shots, you got everything on top of it. You know, it's not just Vicodins, it's all the other things that were involved.
And how much do you have to immerse yourself in this, or have people that you lean on saying, okay, we got to get you out on the field, you're going to have to take XYZ, team is going to offer XYZ. How much say does an agent have in that whole process?
You have to tell them both sides of the equation. You say, look, the coaches are really getting upset. I have had coaches the night before a game get me in a room and dog cuss me to make sure that my client took stuff to go out there and play. And now the medical staffs are much more aware of it and much more cognizant of their liability. So they're like, this player isn't playing. Whereas the coaches will get me in another room and say, you got to teach this kid that he's got to play hurt or he's never going to make it in this league. And I'm not going to tell that guy to do that. And whether he's a first round pick or a third round pick or an undrafted free agent, you just explain to them, that's the nature of this business. If you want to do it, that's your choice, but there will be repercussions. But if you don't, yeah, they're going to find somebody and replace you and move on. Very difficult decision for a player.
In 30 years, have you sat there watching games on a Sunday and seen one of your clients saying to yourself, there's no way in hell he should be out there right now?
Absolutely. I've seen guys not only take all the pain pills and the shots to get back on the field so they wouldn't lose their starting jobs, but spent the entire evening with them and their families afterwards, flew back to Arizona, called them 2 days later, and they didn't even remember me being at their house or seeing me that weekend. That's when you say, hey, we got to start looking at some other ways to make a living.
Okay, so in this lawsuit, okay, and USA Today did a huge piece today, big blaring headlines, and it wasn't good. It's just not good for the league. There's no other way to put it. But when you see this, that six of the players in the new lawsuit also are part of the concussion lawsuit, okay? And this is from Stanford Law Professor Bill Gould. I don't know if you know Bill. I don't know how many Stanford Law Professors are attached to stories. Quote, it does seem to reflect a trend for a period of time of recklessness on the part of the NFL. Gee, you think? This litigation, if the complaint is accurate, would reflect very much the same kind of reckless or cavalier attitude toward player safety that seemed to be present in the concussion lawsuit. So I'm going off two lawsuits now against the NFL. And do you see the correlation there that there could be two of these that come together? The players settling for $766 million to me was a joke initially.
Correct.
It's an absolute joke.
Correct.
This seems to me to be one where here's seven or eight guys that have come forward, and yet you could open the floodgates and every last player could come forward over a period of time.
Thousands and thousands more will come forward, and this will go into the multi-billions by the time this thing is done. Hmm. Because it's clear cut, and there was a very good book written back I believe it was in the late 80s, early 90s, called It's Just a Bruise. And yeah. It was written by the Raiders team doctor at the time, who obviously wasn't the Raiders team doctor after he wrote this book. But just saying what a difficult time he had being forced to shoot these players up to get them on the field. Because if he didn't, he would be replaced.
Right.
And they would find another team doctor to do it. And there's plenty of those people that are in private practice now that will come forward. There's plenty of owners that are deceased, which the former team doctors have no problem coming forward. And then you have poster children in this league, or poster men in this league, great men, great players like Junior Seau that have the concussion issues. He also had a lot of other issues with his body, even though he took good care of his body. But now you've got the Jim McMahons, some very recognizable names out there that
sure.
are really coming forward. And just saying the truth, what took place in the 80s and 90s that was very commonplace.
Can this wipe out the league? I've asked you this question before in a certain sort of way, and you've given me the same look that you're giving me now, which is, this isn't going to wipe out the league.
Not going to wipe out the league. This thing is too big now. I mean, they got a $10 billion a year business. This is pennies on the dollars for them to make this go away. But the publicity alone is not helping, because the same way that you don't have a lot of African Americans playing baseball now, and it's much more Latino based.
Sure.
I think there's going to be a lot of people that don't want their children to play football.
And I'm already seeing that. I mean, there's a couple of notable high schools here where their freshman teams were getting 100 and 120 kids, and now they're getting 50 and 60, and those kids are going to lacrosse, and those kids are going to soccer. Not that you can't get hurt in those sports, but
correct.
They're not playing the game like it used to be played. I actually agree a little bit with where Mark Cuban's stance is on the NFL, that they're doing more harm to themselves by trying to be the big behemoth rather than pull it back a little bit. I don't know if you've seen those comments through all this, because this is – you start stacking this stuff. That's where I'm at.
Well, it's like going to war and expecting to not be shot at. I mean, it's just the nature of the game. The only way that people are going to keep watching it, and the nature of the game is violence. It leads to injuries. It leads to concussions. And if you want to keep this seven-figure job, there's certain things you have to do to stay on that field. Now, they're much more aware of it, and they're trying to tell the players no, but the players will find another way to do it, because they don't they don't want to lose this amount of money that can set them up for life.
No, I get you on that. Appreciate you coming down, as always. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Metz, business side of the NFL. Really good stuff today. Appreciate him in studio. Back with more after this time out. Sports360AZ.com. AZ Central Sports, good to partner with the Arizona Republic day in and day out. White Mountain Radio and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat.
College football fans, check out the Recruiting Roundup with Jared Cohen and Jason Jewell on Sports360AZ.com.
Coming up in the next hour, J.D. Hill is going to be with us, the former Sun Devil. He is part of this lawsuit that came out yesterday. He's one of the eight plaintiffs, and he's right here in the Valley. There's three players. Roy Green is part of this lawsuit, former Cardinal. Ron Pritchard's name is attached to this, former Sun Devil. And J.D. Hill, former Sun Devil, he's attached to this lawsuit as well. So this is the one that just came out yesterday. There's two lawsuits against the league. One where the NFL and players agreed on a settlement of $765 million, and now the federal judge has gone back and said, come on, are you kidding me? And so that one's on the concussion side. This lawsuit against the league is dealing with painkillers. Painkillers and this lawsuit, and J.D. Hill here in about 10 minutes or thereabouts. This segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Santan Ford General Manager Tim Hovick was exchanging some text messages with him earlier this week. How are things going? We're going to meet up out at the dealership. It's a great partnership with Santan Ford and Sports 360 AZ. It can be a great partnership for you. As part of the Sports 360 AZ team, I'm there for Santan Ford. Santan Ford also has on their starting lineup Carson Palmer, Larry Fitzgerald, Patrick Peterson. They don't mess around. That's how it is. And that's how it'll be for you with your buying experience, whether it's the F-150, whether it is another vehicle of the Ford line that you want to be involved with. Santan Ford, that's the place for you. New or used, if you need some work done on your vehicle, John Bernath and the service department, they do a great job out there as well. That's at Santan Ford. Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it's all about you. A couple other things here in hour number one. Eric Musselman is back in the news. Eric Musselman could be going to Memphis to be the coach or be in their front office. Mike Dunleavy Sr. interviewed today for the Lakers. If the Lakers hire Mike Dunleavy, I would think Suns fans would be doing backflips off that one. Mike Dunleavy was there. Mike Dunleavy going back to the Lakers. I don't know about the Lakers. Everybody says they're going to get it turned around. So they're going to have a top 10. And then there's a lot of you Laker fans out here in the Valley that haven't figured out that you're not living in Los Angeles anymore. It's fine. But the Lakers, you know, they're going to get all the focus along with Boston in this upcoming draft. Milwaukee certainly is not. You would think Philadelphia would get it figured out because they've had high picks in the past. The Bucks are taking deposits for season tickets, $100 for upper level seats, $250 for lower level seats. It's not like they're breaking the bank there in Milwaukee because they didn't get the number one overall pick. I'm more from the Suns end of things. I'm just really interested. I know that there's a bunch of you out there that can't wait for football season. I have to tell you, the story in the Valley, there's a couple of them now that have emerged. When will Tony La Russa pull the plug on Kevin Towers? Not if. When will Kirk Gibson not be here any longer? I think there's more of a chance of Gibby being here after the baseball draft than there is, and that's next month. It's like on June 5th. Then there is Kevin Towers being here by July 1st. I think Kevin and the Diamondbacks by July 1st are going to be going separate ways, if not sooner than that. I don't see this ending well at all. And I do think that Kevin Towers back to the San Diego Padres story is going to keep picking up momentum. That's been out there, and I think that he's so loved and revered, and Josh Burns is in trouble over there. That story with the Diamondbacks is one, but the Suns here in the next 5 weeks are going to have all these picks plus future picks, a general manager with the number one overall pick in Cleveland that already said today, yes, I'm willing to trade the number one overall pick. Yeah, I'm willing to go eat steak and lobster too. So I understand that you're going to ask for a king's ransom if you want the number one overall pick. Sounds all well and good. But David Griffin didn't give the normal, we're going to do whatever is in the best interest of our team nonsense. No, he sounded like a man motivated to want to move this. And I happen to like that. So I think the Sun story is very, very interesting. And the Diamondbacks are very, very interesting and relevant here just in the next few weeks. Those two stories caught my eye today. A couple other things before we finish up hour number one. California Chrome. Have you heard about this story, Eric, of the nasal strip?
Of course.
So it's been going on out there, and you immediately think performance enhancement for a horse. And I grew up showing horses. I showed horses professionally, not in races, in Western and trail and pleasure. I loved doing horse showing. It was a lot of fun, part of my youth. And I am one of those that believes that horses are athletes. What I am not sure about is this story that Darren Revell tweeted out earlier today, is that Sherman Racing has now retained a group to secure marketing deals for California Chrome. This is ahead of the Belmont. So, hey, you want to be part of this horse?
Yep.
What, are they going to put like a Purina tag on the ear? Are they going to sell parts of the horse?
Maybe
for sponsorship?
On the strip. No.
Maybe on the strip. Breathe Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You could have Breathe Right there. And how many millions of dollars can you get? But I saw this story, and now it's picking up some steam on social media as to what kind of marketing deals are you going to get for a horse?
And what's the value?
Well, how can you measure that stuff?
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. Where do you see? Can you say
someone will overpay, Brad?
Can you
don't
trademark?
Worry.
Can you trademark California Chrome? I would think trademarking California Chrome would be very smart. There's got to be millions of dollars that could be made off that, especially
if someone hasn't already.
Oh, sure. And it may have happened here in the last week. I don't know, but on the business side of sports, and I'm always interested to see how guys make a buck. But trying to make a buck off a horse, that one's pretty interesting to me. This 11-year-old girl who won her age group before the Masters has played her way into the U.S. Women's Open next month at Pinehurst number 2. Last night, I'm watching the NBA pregame show, and Jalen Rose said, "Hey, lots of things happen in sports. We have an 11-year-old tennis player now. Zzz. Problem is, she plays golf. I don't know. It's kind of a big story when you're on that stage. You don't screw that up. She's a golfer, not a tennis player." Anyways, Lucy Lee, a sixth grader with braces and a sharp short game, made history at Half Moon Bay. She shot 74 and 68, just like Eric and I. We shoot that all the time. On the front nine. To become the youngest player to qualify for the U.S. Women's Open. Not only did she earn a spot in the biggest event of women's golf, she won the 36-hole qualifier by 7 strokes. So I've got an 11-year-old playing with me, and I'm 17 or 18, and she's beating my butt by 7 strokes. I should probably quit and go into a different profession. How is it an 11-year-old can be that far ahead? And here's the thing about it. So in golf and in tennis, age has no limit, right? Can we ever see an 11-year-old strap it up for the Miami Heat? No. Can we ever see an 11-year-old take one coming down the pike from Randy Johnson? No. Can we ever see an 11-year-old catch one over the middle from Carson Palmer? By the way, good little nugget there from Eric Metz about how the Cardinals are negotiating an extension for Carson Palmer. Did you catch that one? That was pretty good. But an 11-year-old she's not the youngest player, believe it or not, in the history of the U.S. Women's Open. Beverly Class was 10 when she played in 1967. But that's when the U.S. Women's Open didn't have qualifying. A 10-year-old playing in a sport. I love this stuff. I love seeing these kids that come out and get it done early. Sports360AZ.com. Plenty of Arizona content. We're Arizona-centric. Been at it for just short of 3 years. Good to partner with the Arizona Republic. They get what we're doing. AZ Central Sports. Appreciate the partnership. And, of course, on White Mountain Radio across the great state of Arizona. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, feel free to do so. Beat me over the head, whatever it may be. @Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. Off we go into hour number 2 on Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. Good to partner with the Arizona Republic. White Mountain Radio and on Twitter at Brad Cesmat. In a couple of minutes, J.D. Hill is going to be with us. J.D. Hill, former NFL wide receiver whose life went straight to hell after he left the league in 1979, addicted to painkillers, kept him in the game for 7 seasons with Buffalo and Detroit. He is now one of the former players involved in this NFL lawsuit claiming league illegally gave painkillers to mask injuries, which led to addiction. Jim McMahon is part of this latest lawsuit that surfaced yesterday, along with Richard Dent, outlined the dangerous practice of unethically substituting pain medications for proper health care to keep NFL's tsunami of dollars flowing, according to one quote. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind, though, in the world of sports, brought to you by Gateway Airport. Gateway Airport, where it is just plain easy. You want to fly on Gateway to nearly 40 locations around the country? You can take Gateway Airport into Wichita. You can take Gateway Airport and fly Allegiant into the Bay Area, into Oakland. You can fly into Rockford outside of Chicago. You can go a lot of different destinations, Las Vegas, on Allegiant Airlines out of Gateway Airport, and it's plain easy. It's plain, flat-out affordable. Eric and I have flown out of Gateway many, many, many times. Gateway Airport. Just go to Just Plain Easy com, and you'll check it out, Gateway Airport. So the Diamondbacks, I've not hit on them tonight. They face Michael Wacha. Last night, Adam Wainwright absolutely destroyed the Diamondbacks. One hit, a Paul Goldschmidt double. And Bronson Arroyo does what Bronson Arroyo does occasionally, and that's give up home runs, too much of the plate, two of them to St. Louis. Cardinals shut out the Diamondbacks 5-0. McCarthy is on the mound tonight. The Cardinals OTAs yesterday, 90 players on split fields. Eric and I went out there yesterday and wanted to check it all out. Here is John Abraham. I love this from John Abraham. One of the leaders, NFL vet, 15 years, not given the typical sugarcoating, oh, we're going to be great, we're going to be awesome. Instead, being very realistic about this team this coming season.
It don't mean nothing until you get to the 16 games of the season. Like, all this stuff is real nice. Oh, he looked good on paper. Oh, they got him. They got this. Oh, my God. They're going to be the – I remember back in the day when Washington loaded up on everybody. They can get Bruce Smith, Deion. They're going to win the championship this year. Man, I think they won 6 games. they got Hall of Famers all on the team. You know, nothing don't mean nothing on the paper until you, like, play on your Sundays.
That's John Abraham. We're going to hear from J.D. Hill in a minute. First, Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer on being more comfortable after this OTA than he was a year ago when he first came to the Cardinals. This is Carson Palmer yesterday.
It's great to be back out. It's great to, it's not that it's live drills and we're tackling, but to have helmets on and to go against the defense. It's been a long off season and there's been a lot of growth and it's, you know, comparing today to a year ago this day, there's zero comparison. This was fun. This was enjoyable. You could see the development in certain guys. Jumped off the field. The way Mike Floyd is playing right now just jumped out at me from the get-go. Some of the things we saw Ted Ginn do today, in his first rep in this offense. So that kind of stuff is fun, and it's fun to just to get out against their, against Pat and some of the new linebackers we have and the safeties we have, and talk a little trash and compete and go back and forth. So it was a great first day.
What was your comfort level for you today?
You can't. It's hard to gauge that. Just the only way I can say it, there's no comparison. Myself and other guys were out here last year and just swimming. Inside your head, you're thinking about 80 different things. Today, I was thinking about one thing, and that was my first progression, my second progression, my third progression. So it was actually enjoyable. It wasn't frustrating and all the motions you go through when you're learning a new offense. I've had an entire offseason to study this offense and study our guys in this offense, and it was fun.
It was Carson Palmer yesterday out at the Cardinals as we were out there too. A couple other things before we get to J.D. Hill. NBA, the lottery from last night, I'm getting into that with comments from David Griffin, the number one overall pick being held by the Cleveland Cavaliers. Of course, Griff used to be in the Suns front office, and I'm going to connect the dots between the Suns and Cavaliers. We'll do that coming up here in about 7-8 minutes. First, though, as mentioned, J.D. Hill joins us now for a couple of minutes off this story. Former NFL wide receiver, ASU, 8 retired players, including J.D., Bears quarterback Jim McMahon, Hall of Fame defensive end Richard Dent, outlined the dangerous practice of unethically substituting pain medications for proper health care. The headline, former players sue NFL, claim league illegally gave painkillers to mask injuries, which led to addiction. J.D. Hill joins Brad Sussmat here for a couple of minutes. J.D., how are you?
Hey, good. You left Sun Devil great college Hall of Famer Ron Pritchard off that list.
No, I know that. Ron's. Yeah, I saw that. You're right. I did leave Ron off it, and we've been chasing Ron, too. And Roy Green, Valley resident, too. This is something that, when did you first think, J.D., that it was time to come out on this subject and put yourself in the middle of it?
Well, I was contacted by the group and the other players that were involved, and we began to talk about it to see what the validity of it was. Did we have something here? And we began to look back over the careers and various stories, and Roy Green having had a liver transplant, Ron Pritchard having a kidney removed. Guys started beginning to talk about how the painkillers were given out and the long-term effects, how they never told us about stacking, and they would give us codeine and It was pills to sleep, pills to play, pills halftime, pills after the game, and they give you a few beers on an airplane, and they never told us about the harmful effects. In fact, some of these medications, if a doctor prescribed them to you, and if you're caught driving with them, you can actually get a ticket or be arrested. So these are things that were never told to us about the long-term effects of or the side effects of any of these painkillers and medication that we were being given.
J.D. Hill with Brad Sussmat for a couple of minutes. 7 years in the NFL, correct?
Eight,
okay. And in those years in the NFL, was it all eight, J.D., that you went through this?
Yeah, from the time you were entered in as a rookie, you began to take painkillers. You get injured. I know my first year I suffered a severe knee injury from that point on and a back injury. And so I was taking painkillers from the time I went into the league until the time I left. Here's the other thing is that once you are released or cut, you know, you're fired, however you want to say it, and you can't get, you're no longer part of the good old boys club. You're no longer allowed in that locker room. There's no medication. There's no physicians. There's no trainers. And so when you're released, you're on your own. There's nothing that says, here's a group of doctors some that you can contact that could possibly help you out as you're going through this transition period. There's nothing there to help you to make that transition. So what happens is some guys like myself who ended up on drugs and walking the streets and buying drugs off the streets became addicted in and out of drug treatment center, which my story is well documented.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that has to do with the fact that you had no one there to help you to make that adjustment.
What do you think this is going to lead to, JD, in the early going? Just this has been out there for just over 24 hours in the news cycle. Where do you think this is heading?
Oh, well, I tell you, it's getting a lot of fast attention, I tell you that. One thing is that, you know, there's always restitution. You know, there's guys right now like Freddie Williams, Fast Freddie Williams, who's on massive painkillers. We're going to have his funeral service this Friday. He won't be able to tell his story. There's a number of players that have gone on. They can't share their stories. But we have a voice right now that we can share our stories, and there can be some changes that can be made in the future. They test for banned substances. Why not test to make sure that an athlete is not taking too many painkillers? And what's the effect? You got guys that have kidney problems, you know, guys with liver problems, guys with depression, you know, that are stuck on these drugs. And I think education, number one, is going to be a major a factor that comes out of this. It is going to people are going to be more educated about it. Parents are going to be listening to this now and understand what their kids might be getting ready to get involved in, and you know, and how sound is it, and what is the medications that are being given. And I think overall, it's going to bring about a great awareness for sure.
JD, I'm curious, and it's a very personal question, but how many pills a day or how many pills a month do you think you were taking at the height of this?
You know, I was asked that on CNN, and I can't honestly give a correct answer. And so because I can't give a correct answer, I really can't tell you. But I know that it was more than I needed to be taking. And a lot of times, you know, you get prescriptions, you know, because it wasn't controlled or information wasn't given, guys would pass drugs back and forth in the locker room. Hey, man, you got something for pain? Hey, I ran out. Another guy said, hey, I've got some, you know. And so the education wasn't there for what we're facing today.
What kinds of medication? Percocet, Vicodin?
Guys were getting Percocet. Guys were getting Vicodin. Guys were getting codeine. Guys are getting Valium. Guys are getting Librium. You know, stuff to go to sleep, stuff to keep you playing. And see, and it's just it's masking. And when you and the story I've been kind of sharing is that if you're doing standing before a camera and you got a scar on your face and that wasn't there, you put some makeup over it and that mask that scar. But at the end of that segment, you wipe the makeup off. That scar is still there. But that's what's happening with the painkillers. The painkillers were there. Guys were taking them to play. to get going, to play for games, to practice, to continue to participate. But once that pain, that practice or that game was over, that pain was still there when those pain killers wore off. So what do? You take more.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm curious, before I let you go on this. So the concussion lawsuit was settled for much.
Totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different.
Totally different. And but yet it was settled for a number that was just completely obscene to me, that the players would settle for $766 million when it was clearly way above that. And I'm glad a judge is now back involved in that.
Yeah.
In this case, is there a ballpark? We're going to see, I would think, hundreds of players. You're just at the front of this. You're a pioneer on the front of this one. I would think there's going to be hundreds of players that jump in on this one.
Well, I would hope so, because number one is that guys need to come forward if they've got some problems. There's guys out there that don't even realize that they've got problems or where the problems even stemmed from. So there's definitely going to be a far-reaching because of the information that's out now. It's becoming very visible, and people are very sympathetic to it, and they realize that, hey, man, we weren't even aware. Even the public was not even aware of the drug culture that was being created by the NFL.
But there is that side that will say, I don't care. I just want my football, and the game is violent, and pain is part of it, and players have to deal with it. I don't agree with that side of the street, but I've already heard that argument.
Well, that's the way it is in any gladiator arena. Mm-hmm. The fans say thumbs down. You know, they just want to see blood. So hopefully that they don't have kids that will eventually decide because they want to be like Joe Montana or be like Jim McMahon or be like Larry Fitzgerald. If they want to play football because they got an autograph, then they may end up in a situation where they may end up being a young man that ends up taking medication. And this is just doesn't only stand with males. This is male-female, because when you got pain, you know, there's medication that's being given to keep that player on that field.
I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time. As always, look forward to catching up with you down the road on this, J.D. Thanks.
Hey, you can call me anytime.
Appreciate it. J.D. Hill there for a couple of minutes. Former Sun Devil, NFL wide receiver. Of course, addicted to painkillers that kept him out of the game, kept him in the game, rather, for seven seasons with the Buffalo Bills and Detroit Lions. Appreciate JD's time on that. Good get, Eric. That story is just, and it's not going to go away. It's going to be like the concussion issue. One other thing I didn't get into the show today. Eric, did you hear about Rory McIlroy?
I did.
You know, so his wedding invites are already in the mail, and he called off his engagement.
That's wasted money. Those invites are not cheap.
Now, have you sent your invite? I have not received an invite.
They are in the mail.
I've gotten a save the date. I've not gotten an invite.
They are in the mail. You should be receiving them in the next couple days.
So you're not going to pull a McIlroy, are you?
No. I'm to the point of no return.
Yeah,
now,
your point of no return. I'm just, you know, I know you admire these athletes a lot.
I don't admire them that much.
I saw the McIlroy story, and I first thought was you.
He can probably take the hit though off the cost of those trashed
stamps.
And the trashed invites. I mean, it's not like he's living paycheck to paycheck, so
give me the ring back.
That might be a different story.